Hi, everyone. Before we get started with today's episode, I need to address some recent news. And also, I want to issue a trigger warning for the next minute or two. I'm going to be talking about sexual assault. So, if that's trigger for you, fast forward a minute or two until we get to the start of the episode. So, at the end of February 2020, a woman came forward with the story that alleged that Timothy Hutton raped her shortly after he became famous. I don't want to go into the details here, but the story was originally published on BuzzFeed News. So if you want to read the full account, you can go there and find it. What I do want to make clear here is that we here at Let's Go Steal a Podcast believe the victim and we stand with her. I've discussed this issue with my other co-host, and we honestly did consider just stopping the podcast altogether. But we have, at this moment in time, anyways, decided to move forward. The fact is, we were fans of the show before these allegations broke. We're going to do our best to separate the character of Nate Ford from the actor who played him. And as always, we're going to apply a critical eye to what the show is saying in every instance, just the way that I feel that we have for the past three seasons of the show. But as this story develops, we might need to change this approach. So, and I'll keep you updated if we decide to do something different. And as always, I welcome your thoughts on how we should handle this going forward. Thank you, and let's move on to this episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast. All right. Welcome back, everybody. We are going to be talking about the girls' night out job tonight, and Lisa Lynn is with me. We've got a girls' night in to talk about a
Girls'
girls'
night
night
out. Hey, y'all.
out. So this episode aired on December 11th, 2011, and this is the official summary from TNT. When a James Bond-like thief targets Parker's friend Peggy, yay, Peggy! Parker
I love
recruits Sophie
Peggy.
and Tara to help her. And yes, and together the women of Leverage follow the thief to the Venezuelan consulate, where they discover an international conspiracy. And they kind of describe this one as like Charlie's Angels meets James Bond.
Big love for
And
Peggy.
yeah, oh my
And
God, Peggy back from the door number six job.
can we just back up for a moment? Because I don't think I've been on the pod since the reboot was announced.
Yes, would you like to? I've been, well, no, I've had it in different places on the podcast.
I
So,
am so
yes.
excited. And like a big shout out to the new, like the showrunner, Kate Rourke. And like
Yes.
this is maybe my one and only like connection to Hollywood, because I know her as Kate Noble, because she's also a romance writer. She used to write
Oh.
historical romance, so I knew her as Kate Noble. That is my one and only like Hollywood connection.
That's
Hey, Kate.
awesome.
But
Oh my gosh, I love it.
am so excited.
I love
I'm
when people are
sad
just
that
doing
they're having to adjust and work around Alice's schedule, so he may not be on as much as we would like.
Yeah, that's really sad. But I mean, who knows? With all of what's going on right now, everything might change. There was an oh, I meant to bring this up in the last episode of the podcast and then completely forgot to talk about it with Jen. But there was an article that ran on June 1st in on assignmentx.com. There was an interview with Christian Kane. They did an interview with him about the end of the first season of Almost Paradise, his show with Dean Devlin. And then like right after they like got off the phone with him, they announced the reboot. And so they like called him back and were like, hey, can you talk about this now? And he's like, yeah, I was like under embargo, like I couldn't talk about it. So they like went back and interviewed him. And it's a pretty cool interview. So I'll put the link for it in the show
They
notes.
muzzled
I
him.
mean,
He
I'm
wasn't allowed to
assuming.
talk about it until it was like official, official.
Yeah, well, let me see what it says. Readers of Assignment X know that Kane recently gave a two-part interview about Almost Paradise to the magazine. Approximately 4 hours after that interview was conducted, news broke about the Leverage reboot. Kane thereafter graciously got back on the phone to discuss this, explaining that he couldn't say anything earlier. because he had been asked not to mention the Leverage revival until the announcement had been made public. It's a really cute article with him. He talks like he hadn't really talked with any of the other castmates about it yet. Like, he and Aldous had been playing phone tag with each other, trying to talk.
I love that they're actual bros in real life. They're bros.
How could he not be? He also says that Elliot is like his favorite character he's ever played. And they also said, which I think is interesting, that as of right now, they're not going to be filming in Portland again, but they are probably going to be in New Orleans.
So they would have to be like, explain why they left Portland then, no?
Oh, I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're not going to pretend that it's been a week since the show ended, right? Everybody looks kind of different now. A little bit older. Also, Christian Kane turning 48 on June 27th. So.
He's a Cancer?
Yeah, I guess he is.
June.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm excited. And he, you know, he talked about how he's really comfortable filming with Noah Wiley because, you know, they work together on The Librarians. And Noah also directed a couple episodes at The Librarians. So he's just, like, really comfortable with him in front and behind the camera.
So,
and he really, for the they asked the Timothy Hutton question, like, any notion why Timothy Hutton is not coming back? And he just says, I don't know. He's like, I'm not talking about it.
Probably, so, honestly, like, the smartest, like, the best answers you could give. Like, I'm not touching that.
The 10-foot pole. But yes, okay.
But that is so funny. That is like, I wasn't allowed to talk about it. It's like in publishing, where like, where authors are like, oh, I can't go to that happening. I can't talk about it. And then like, it ends up being like, you know, the cover is so gorgeous, guys, but I can't talk about it. Or like, you know, something's happening. And then you have to wait like 3 months until the deal announcements that they can actually, yes, yeah. I signed. I'm writing a new 3 books with like Berkeley or something, you know? And it was just like, man.
Yeah. Or like when movie reviewers are embargoed and they can't talk about the movie yet. You're just like, tell me if it's good.
Tell me if I should spend the $20 to $50 to go and buy a ticket and buy the snacks.
Right. Okay, so let's go to the episode, and then at the very end, like when we do highlights and stuff, I'd love if you want to spitball possible ideas for episodes, like what you think they should do, because I've thought of some and I cannot remember them right now, so we'll wait till the end of the episode. Hopefully I remember some of mine.
Okay,
so like I was saying, this episode aired on December 11th 2011.
And a cross between James Bond and Charlie's Angels.
And you had two recurring guest stars. We had Jeri Ryan, the beautiful Tara, and Lisa Scherga, who plays
Peggy
from the Juror Number 6 Job, who's
adorable, sweet, innocent, like summer child Peggy.
Right, who has moved from LA or, you know, California to Boston. And now she's not a nutritionist anymore. Now she's a caterer. And she's apparently a good one because she is catering a fancy dinner at the Venezuelan consulate.
I was not aware that Venezuela had a consulate in Boston.
Well, why?
I thought most consulates were like in New York or DC. I was not aware that.
No, you can. There are consulates because there's like a Spanish consulate in Houston. Like there's consulates places. Yeah.
Interesting.
I think if you're like in a, if it's like a big metropolitan area, I think it makes sense to me anyways. So you should Google that really quick. See if there is one in Boston. It was written by Chris Downey and Jen Cao, who is a new staff writer for Leverage this season. And this is the first one that she's like been one of the co-writer credits for. She was also like pregnant during the season. So she's like writing this show pregnant. And it was directed by Mark Roskin. This episode's really fun because it is intercut with the boys' night out job, which they filmed concurrently. And it's like what the guys are doing while the girls are having their night out. And John Rogers directed that one. And so he wasn't on set for most of this one. And so, like,
and I think he said on his blog the whole thing was a bloody logistical nightmare, but like it ended up turned out great.
Yes, they it's, you know, it's filmed at night and they filmed it on like the shortest night of the year. And there are also a lot of sets that they've reused. So the Venezuelan consulate is in the this fancy hotel that was also from the last episode of last season. It was like the prime minister's office in
from the San Lorenzo job.
San Lorenzo, yeah. And and the hallway that our Charlie's Angels walk down at the end, when they like get Mattingly on board with them, is the same hallway from the hotel that they stayed in.
Where Ellie's so excited and then he busts in on Nate and Sophie.
Exactly. And you're like, oh wait, that floor looks familiar. So yeah, on our Leverage Portland trip one day, whenever all of this ends, we should go stay there. It looks real fancy.
Can we afford it?
We should have one night there and the rest we like stay at an Airbnb, like a big old house, and split that. You know, this isn't the future. We have to get through this pandemic first, so.
Which is a big if at this point, but okay.
A big, bold, capitalized, italicized, underlined if. So, yeah. We open up with a man in a tuxedo fleeing from the scene of a crime from two men. And he's like James running Bond. Through traffic and then very James Bond. And he ends up escaping because he holds himself parallel to the ground alongside like an SUV. As the SUV drives off, which is just incredible core and upper body strength. And then he just like makes eyes at the lady in the passenger seat whose husband is very plain and boring. And she's
not
like,
attention and not noticing there's a guy. Like,
yeah. Like, come on, dude, check your rear view mirrors. Yes, her husband is
oblivious.
And then we get like this scene at the apartment where it's kind of chaos. The guys are setting up, they're having a poker night unbeknownst to Nate, who just got a call from Detective Bonanno. And
we love.
He's love Bonanno, but we don't see him in this episode. We see like the back of his head. Which I like because in the last episode, there's like a bit where Nate is being interviewed by the documentary film crew in the office job. And they ask like, what interests do you have outside of work? And he can't answer because it doesn't have any. So it's like Hardison and Elliot are like, we are going to make you have an interest. And Sophie says, you know, your dad had a long-standing poker game with like criminals and law enforcement. And he's like, oh yeah, I should really model myself after my father. Good
That's
idea.
That's exactly what I want to do. Like,
yeah.
good deduction, Sophie. And I was like,
he's
such a bastard.
He is, but also, it's a fair point. His dad is even more of a bastard. And they're like, name one person that you talk to outside of the crew. And he's like, and they're like, and don't say Maggie. They mentioned in one of the trivia things for this episode that someone who wrote it must love someone named Margaret, because there's like several different iterations of the name Margaret. There's Maggie, there's Peggy. I feel like something else is a peg. And then Marge at the very end.
Meg Dawson. I think that was Parker's...
Yes, Meg, Peggy, Meg, and Marge, and Maggie. Yeah, you're
right. Yes.
So I'm like, oh my gosh, that's a lot of iterations of Meg.
Margaret. I thought Meg was like maybe Megan. Who knows?
Yeah. So Oh, but we also, oh man, I skipped over. It's like the cutest thing. Our Hardison shows Parker that he has tickets for them to go to this robot death match. And he's so excited. And he's like, we're going to be right next to the plexiglass. We're going to watch him bleed oil out. And she's
And then
like,
he gets like a little verklempt, like just like picturing the robot dying.
does. And they kind of frame this as Parker's like, this was not interesting to me at all. Like, how are we gonna mesh? Like, this is so opposite. When in reality, I know that the minute Parker goes to this and sees robots tearing into each other, she's gonna be so into it. Parker is
But
gonna
she's
be.
also aware enough that, like, she knows that she should at least try to pretend to like what Hardison likes, and that she should not say anything that would rain on his parade.
Which I think is leaps and bounds. Like,
From
she's
where
come
she was.
so
Yeah.
far. And she goes to Sophie, and Sophie's trying to leave. She's in this like amazing all-white outfit, this
I
like
mean,
little
and like at
blue
that
dress.
point, like Alvis was like just like over emotional about it. Like, you see them when they bleed oil. It's
Oh,
so
teared up.
unnecessarily over the top.
No, it's not. He's perfect.
But yes,
But
like Parker's
yeah.
like getting a little concerned. She's a little
When she
freaked
gets
out.
there, do you not agree that the minute she gets there and starts seeing them fight, she's gonna get so into it?
I think something will click, and then like, and like the dark side of her will be like, yes, blood, death, and destruction.
Yes.
Yes.
This is a woman who stabbed a man with a fork. She's gonna get into this.
But I just loved how Beth played it, and because at the end we're doing the robot, and they're like, what? And then like kind of like a thing, and then her last what is like, what the hell?
That's true. To the robot.
Like,
But yeah, so
what?
she's really concerned about this. Like, we're so different. How are we gonna get along? And she's like, Sophie, you know that thing where I tell you what's wrong and you fix me? And she's like, you mean give you advice? But also, she stops
Yes.
Sophie, who's in a hurry, and she's like trying to go down the elevator because she's on her way to a date or to go somewhere. And she keeps stopping the elevator. I'm like, Parker, you're also going somewhere. Get on the elevator with her. Or does Parker, do you think Parker only leaves buildings by jumping out of the window?
And like, you know, like, and I feel like normally Sophie is like happy to like give Parker this is how we human lessons, but she
Yeah.
just does not have like the
She's
bandwidth
learning.
at the moment. She just has some place to be. This is not a good time.
Exactly. And she's like, don't you have somewhere to go? And then Parker starts launching into what she's doing, which is meeting up with Peggy to make sure that the guy that she met on a dating site for cat lovers is okay. And like, which I think is so sweet that, well, and Parker's also like, do you remember Alice's friend Peggy? And they're like, you're Alice. Remember, you're Alice. She's your friend. But yeah, so she's
And
gonna
so
go
she's
check
like,
Peggy.
I have to bet I love Paw 72.
I love 72. And she's Tabby fan 76. Yeah, so she's there to check him out. And Peggy shows up and she's gonna take him on a date to her job, which is catering this event. And
A
she
little
has to go
weird.
take. That's very strange. She has to go take a call outside, and Parker notices the very suave man from earlier on the car come to the bar. He's in his tux and he orders a drink. And she's like, suspicious. So she takes a sneaky pic on her phone and sends it off to Hardison.
I mean,
And
did they also have Will Travail do the whole shaken not stirred thing with the drink? I don't
he
remember.
did not. That would have been really great. He
Yes.
did not. But yeah, he does. No, because he asked for a tequila, a cold, like an ice cold
Yes,
tequila. I
yes, yes.
think it's a little too obvious. So she sends it off to Hardison to see if he can scan him with the facial recognition software that Hardison spent a long time hacking into. And they find out that this guy is a thief and has like a big old record. And Hardison's like, also like, that's a very handsome man. And she's like, okay, bye.
With this very square jaw, and you know, and like, so he's feeling a little insecure at the moment. Like,
yeah. And we find out his name is Craig Mattingly. He's wanted for burglary and grand larceny and a whole bunch of other stuff in other lots of countries. So then Parker like calls Sophie, and we see where Sophie is, and she's about to have a night of debauchery with Tara.
We miss Tara. Welcome back.
She's so wonderful. I especially love this because Sophie and Tara didn't have any actual like scenes together when Tara was on that season. So this is really cool to see them being old friends. And this whole episode is very much about like being with people who are a lot like you, but then also they're not like you, or like,
I mean,
you're with
somebody who's
not like you, and that is why it's good. Like, it's a really fun play on these opposites.
I feel like they went really obvious with the symbolism when they had Sophie in the white mini dress, and then Tara was in the black mini outfit. Like,
yeah. Yeah, no, it's like, oh, what are you trying to tell us? And then I love it also, like, Tara has the blonde hair, Sophie has the black, like, dark brown hair. So, like, really looks good with their coloring, but it is very much blatant symbolism.
Like, and it's obvious that they're friends, but it's so obvious that there's a bit of a competition rivalry thing, like.
Yeah, and, like, a difference in, you know, what they do. And they say, like, you know, why haven't we worked together before? And it's because you don't need two grifters on one team. But yeah, so Sophie is persuaded to help Parker out with this situation because she's like, this is the guy. He's going to, whatever he's
after. Does this look like I Love Paul 72 to you?
They're like,
oh, and Will Ferrell does not look like an I Love Paul 72.
No. No. And they're like, okay, we're going to go toss Mattingly's room and you take care of Peggy. So she tells Peggy that I Love Paul 72 is there, and he's like this sad old man. And Peggy's like, oh my gosh, thank you for looking out. Like, why can't I just find a nice man? I'm going to go to work. And so she leaves, and Parker impulsively walks right up and is like, hi, I'm Peggy. And she just like, Parker's not good at the long con, but she like, to approach a guy, she like just turns on those sparkly eyes and you're just like, oh, hi. Like, she's so cute.
It's the wholesome blonde girl next door thing.
Yeah, but she's like, she's got a little twinkle, so you know, like, she's a little, there's a little bit of like the fox behind the ears, like a little mischief there. Before Peggy leaves though, Parker like steals her invitation to the event as well.
And can we also just take back and notice that, like, again, like, how far Parker has come, because she reaches out to, like, Hardison, like, I need you to take out this guy for me. And she's like, okay, I need your help. Like, what do I do with this guy? You know?
Yeah.
Like, she tags, even when Sophie was like, I'm trying to have a night out, or I am off work, but then, like, she just drags them in anyway. So, like, this is her family. This is her team. She knows she can rely on them. You know? Yeah.
What was it, the inside job when she's like, without telling anybody, goes off to try to get what's his name off?
Archie.
Like, it's just so different from that, because now she knows she can call on them and that they'll be there for her, even if they're in the middle of something else. Which,
she's just lucky that Tara and Sophie decided, like, the bar where they're at is just dead, and like, they have nothing better to do. So what the hell? Let's go to the Palestra. Check it out.
It's fun. Let's go. Like, we might get to tango. Who knows?
Hey, we're getting ahead of ourselves. That's my job.
be my answer, Jen. Yes. So Tara and Sophie search Mattingly's hotel room, and they have like vastly different techniques how they want to go about it. Like Tara's just like ripping through the drawers, and Sophie's like, "What are you doing?" And she's like, "It's lightning strike. That's what they teach you at Quantico." And Sophie says she uses the Boylan method, which is most likely a reference to Christine Boylan, writer on the show.
Yes.
And she's like, and
there like, is an art, and we do this. There's a style. We do this with style. There's an art to this, to the you know, I don't know what they would call it, like a surveillance or whatever it is, when you tear apart like a thing for, when you look for evidence.
Yeah. And Tara's like, no, it's lightning strike, because you never have as long as you think you're going to have. And on like clockwork, they hear someone trying to get in the door, and they're like,
Tara mentions Quantico. So that's another piece of a puzzle where she gets her skills.
Yeah.
And could explain, like, in the inside job when she was decoding, book.
Mm-hmm.
How she could decrypt it.
Yeah.
God, I forget what that guy, Mark Doyle. Yes. Mark Doyle. That was the name of the bad guy. Yeah. That's
the Irish guy.
The Ledger. Yes. Yeah. But yeah, so they hear a noise, and we will find out next week what that noise was.
That was the bottle job though, wasn't it?
That was the bottle job. Yes.
You know, yes. I forget the titles.
They're tossing. They hear a noise, and we will find out next week what that noise is.
No, the guys come in the room.
Yeah.
So the
why they were coming. So yes.
Okay. They hide in the closet, and then they like bust out, and one of the guys points a gun at Sophie when she's like laying on the ground.
Tara couldn't hold in a sneeze.
I know, God, Tara. But it was because they ripped open the feather pillows, so there were feathers in the air.
So really, it was their fault. It's not her fault.
Exactly. If they had just like been a little classier about it, they used the Boylan method. Fine.
And not be so sloppy. Like,
yeah,
Sophie. The place.
Sophie distracts the gunman and is like, "It's on safety." And then Tara can like break something over his head, and they run away.
And then there was that moment where they have like when Sophie's trying to buy some time, like, "Look, your safety's on." Mm-hmm. And then Tara knocks him dead, and then Tara was like, "Oh, the gun was off. Not for a grifter." And then Tara just mocked, "Not for a grifter." So you can see that there's that friendship, you know, but there's that competition and rivalry, like, right there. Like, yeah, but underneath there is that respect.
Like, bordering on like frenemy status, where you like do admire your frenemy.
A nemesis situation, even a nemesis situation.
Yeah, it's like a frenemy. You're friends, but they're your enemy, right? So downstairs, only a couple in line to get in, and she's like just kind of sort of pretending to know anything about cats. And Peggy's trying to get in.
Okay. That's like, who the hell just randomly brings their dry cleaning and has like a cocktail dress just hanging on the door at the bar for Parker to steal? Like, yeah, who does that?
Basically, I figured it was like the waitress. It was kind of a posh place. Maybe the waitress had to change into it, and she just brought it in and put it down. Like, I don't know. That was my thought.
And it just happens to be Parker's size,
right? That's magic right there.
We're pushing the suspension of disbelief a little there, people, but we'll go with it.
Yeah. I think so.
Because like you're saying, like Parker's trying to come up with something to say about cats. And so like you mentioned, are ligers a thing?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I think they're kind of like a mule, like a horse and a donkey, but they're sterile, like they can't produce or reproduce. Look at it. I mean, it was also in Napoleon Dynamite, so who knows?
Yes. Yeah. And
okay,
Sophie and Tanner are in line. Backup's coming, but they're in line, waiting to get in.
I love how they get in. Tara's like got a badge, and she's like, "Okay, I'm Secret Service. I'll get you in, and we're here to monitor the people." And she's like, "No, I'm not going in as a Fed. Like, get out of here." And she's like,
"Plus, your deputy."
Fine. Yeah, and so she goes in, and then Sophie just drapes herself over this man, and she's like, "The agency sent me," like a Russian accent. And then see them inside.
Like Tara, like scoffs, like Russian escort. That is so 3 years ago.
Yeah, she's like, And then like 2 seconds later, Sophie's yelling at this man, and then she comes up. She's like, "That man thought I was a prostitute."
Bloody cheek. Like, what did she think he was going to think she was doing that? Draping her around and talking about the agency sent me.
I know. I think that's ironic. Like,
and then Yuri, the Golden Glove boxer.
Yeah.
That was just hilarious.
And then, you know, Mattingly immediately when they get in, he's like, "Oh, go do your work. I'll go mingle and make friends." Not that we're on a date or anything, but... So Parker is just watching him from, like, she's just very obviously watching him while drinking some champagne. And Peggy shows up, like, sees her, and is like, what are you doing here? And then
she's already upset because Parker stole her invitation, so she had to, like, force her way pass through security. So she's already, like, upset. She's not happy. Her blind date is a bust. She can't, and you know, so she's not happy. She's not in a good headspace.
She's got a really shitty waiter who's not carrying cups correctly. Yeah, and then she sees Mattingly, who is gorgeous. He's played by this Australian actor, and
Will she's Travail, like, "Whoa." Yeah.
Yes, and she starts to, like, she's like, "Oh my God," and she, like, starts to go for him, and Parker's like, no, he's, like, not good, but, you know, Peggy's pissed and isn't listening, and also, like, how are you going to explain that? Like, "Oh, by the way, I'm actually a master thief, but I work with a crew of people and we take out bad guys, and he's a bad guy. And I've been lying to you this whole time. My name is really Parker."
Like, this is about as honest as Parker gets. Like, "I'm not good at this. So can we just move on to the part where you're not mad at me anymore? Can we do that?"
She's like, "No."
And she's like, "This is what I'm like, really trying to help you here, but can we just get to this bad part where you're mad at me, because I don't know how to deal with that, and I don't want to deal with that because I actually like you."
Yeah. And I'm busy doing this other thing, so.
And that's the thing. Like, more of my money. She's genuinely fond of Peggy. Like, she was worried about Peggy. Like, you know, like.
Exactly.
Like, she wants to know what this I Love Paul 72 is up to.
Yeah. So they start to kind of suss out what he's there to do. And the three of them, they, like, kind of conclude that he must be there to sell something. And Parker points out that he's, because he's, like, talking to buyers. And Parker's like, "This is going to be an on-site theft. So whatever it is, he doesn't want to worry about storing it somewhere or transporting it. So he's meeting with the buyers here. He's going to go steal it and immediately bring it back to them." So
stop and shop, I think they called it.
Exactly.
And this also means he targeted Peggy because she was just using her as a way to get into the party, to do the deal.
Right.
So then the question becomes, how did he know who Peggy was and how that he knew to target her so she could get him into the party?
He looked up who could get him into the party. Like, he was like, "Okay, there's going to be a party. There's going to be a caterer. Where's the weak link in the catering line who would have a plus one that isn't rich and famous? Okay. Oh, the owner of this restaurant of this catering company is single." And I, like, you know,
I guess he Googled and found her online profile.
Yeah.
Cat profile, TabbyFan 72, 76.
I probably would not be, like, if, you know, you follow someone's social media and then you, like, search for them and you look up certain parameters on dating sites, I'm sure it's not actually that hard. You don't need to be.
This is 2011, 2012, so Twitter was getting going by that point. So, yes, this tracks.
Yeah. 2011, that's when I joined Twitter. My God, that's a long time. Okay, So, you know, Mattingly goes off to steal whatever he's going to steal. So Parker has to go and kind of intercept it and stop whatever it
and
is.
Peggy's upset and Parker's Peggy. Upset that she hurt her friend's feelings. But she has a job to do. And Sophie promises, it's okay, we're going to fix things with you and Peggy, but let's do the job.
Yeah.
So they're trying to, like, get, they're trying to figure out what the game is, what Mattingly's game.
So. Yeah, so while Parker goes off after him, they're, like, profiling all of the sellers, or the buyers. And then we get to see their techniques again. So, you know, Tara's far away, and she's, like, reading their micro expressions and things like that, while Sophie's walking by them and, like, assessing, like, we've seen her do, like, what are they wearing? Like, how do they talk? Like, how are they standing? So she kind of, you know, deduces there's, like, a Texas oil man type, and then, like, a more intimidating guy that Tara thinks works for the drug cartels. And then they call him Escobar for the rest of the episode. I don't know if his name is actually Escobar or if they're just calling him that after Pablo.
Like, I was thinking it was probably, like, a reference to Pablo Escobar.
But then they only call him that. And so much that I'm like, wait, is that really his name? Actually, let's look
it
up.
I think it is. Like, his first name, like, is Octavio.
Yes.
So his name is Pablo
Octavio Escobar. Okay, yeah. So it's actually his name. But I was like...
So, and I only knew that because I bought the book and I remember watching this documentary on Pablo Escobar, who was one scary, nasty, bad dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yes. So, but then they also noticed that one of the buyers, like, doesn't fit in with these guys. He's just kind of this schlubby looking dude with glasses, I think. And so they need to figure out, like, why he's there. Like, he's the... You know, one of these things is not like the other. One of these things does not belong. So they, like, go over as Secret Service agents and, like, take him outside
but
and
don't
talk
to him. Don't call him schlubby. He's just a nerdy academic. Don't call him schlubby. Don't judge him.
I don't judge him because he's sweet. I love him. I love him. Professor... What's
his name? Garcia, I think it was.
Humberto Garcia. You're right.
Yes.
And yeah. So they
what
take him outside.
The name, Humberto.
Humberto, I love that name. So we find out that he's come to buy a file with the reserve levels of Venezuela's oil fields, which is really important. And so they're like, so how did you, you're just like a college professor, how did you get enough money to pay for this? And he's like, oh, I have something better than money. And he opens up his briefcase and there's a tape recorder and he plays and it's this music. And he says, it's the hopes and
like
dreams.
He's singing probably like some folk song. And it's like.
Yeah. The hopes and dreams of the Venezuelan people. And at the same time that Sophie says, that's lovely. Tara says, that's hilarious. And they're like.
And she's like, are you serious?
Yeah.
And again, that just shows like how Sophie's been indoctrinated by the team, like, philosophy. Yeah. We're good people. We help the good guys now. And then Tara's still kind of, like, she respects the team and the mission, but she's not quite there yet. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And it kind of, like, I think that's also, like, a part of their, like, they're having a hard time hanging out one-on-one because their worldviews have changed so much. And at the beginning, also, like, when they first get to the consulate, they kind of have this moment where Tara says something like, oh, that's getting old or something. And she's like, oh, you were just on some oil baron's yacht the other day. And he's like, but he thinks I'm a tennis player or golf pro. Yeah. And so she's like, it's kind of getting old, like, they don't know who I am, like, I forget who I, what cover I'm playing. But then it's also that, like, exhaustion of, like, the exhaustion of, like, never being able to be yourself and, like, always having to remember your cover and not being close to anybody. Whereas Sophie, now these people know her and she's in, like, an intimate relationship with one of these people, and, you know, so they're like, they've really, like, two roads, you know,
like, there was that moment and Sophie's like, the lament of a drifter, who really knows us? So, like, there was that moment, they're like, and then, like, Tara's like, amen, sister.
Yeah, but the irony is that people do know Sophie now.
Well, like she's moved me on. Because she still doesn't know her real name. But yeah. Know
her real name. But knowing her real name, not knowing her,
exactly,
aren't the same thing anymore. You know, they were, but not so much anymore. Yeah. So Parker finds Mattingly and he's trying to get, like, pick this lock into an office. And she, like, pretends to be drunk and, like, just stands with her back to it and, like, busts it open, like, just without looking. And they fall into the room and he's, like, searching the office because he, like, left his sweater in his friend's office or something. And she realizes that he's searching for something on the computer because he's searching for something on the computer. And so she, like, goes to, like, call, make sure the catering's going well. And she actually calls Hardison and is like, hey, in this picture, like, where else in this office would I find a file if I can't find it on the computer? And he's like, oh, it's in that digital picture frame. Right? So she goes and, like, over and, like,
Hardison's in the middle of something.
Yes, he's in a bar saying that he's a crooked cop, a dirty cop.
I'm a dirty cop!
God, I love him so much. And like, boy, everybody, like, else,
overplays everybody else it all the time, Steve. Your boy overplays it all the time.
I don't know if you've noticed this about me, Lisa, but I am the biggest fan of hyperbole. So, like, I'm about that. I'm about being over the top. Love it. Love it. But yeah, like, everybody else in this bar is unconscious because Elliot has beaten everyone up. So they are definitely, they're definitely in it right now. But we don't know what it is. And I can't wait to find out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, my battery's at 15%. So I'm
really
my iPad soon. Yeah, it's like draining it. And I was at 100 when we first started talking. My phone is very warm in my hand. So we'll go for a little bit, and then I'll try to switch it over to my iPad.
So yeah, she's trying to pretend to be drunk and trying to, you know, mess with Mattingly because Mattingly is obviously trying to do something with the computer, so she's trying to figure it out.
Yeah, so Hardison helps her figure it out that it's on the digital picture frame, and she's helping him. Like, she's like, you're dumb. Let me figure this out so that I can steal it from you. And he fumbles as he, like, attempts to, like, as he's trying to hide that he's doing this. And then they hear security coming. So she hides behind a curtain. And then, like, the security comes and she's like, oh. And then he, like, chokes the guy out. Not great right now. And then, so they go, they have to leave. And they get to this elevator, and the elevator is out of order. So he busts open, like, the fire axe, and then, like, they pry the elevator door open. And Parker, like, just jumps on the cable and starts, like, climbing up the cable. And he's like, you are not
you're a cat no lover. Cat lover.
No cat lover. And she's like, what? And then she's, like, in this, like, little dress with these heels. She's, like, shimmying up. Yeah. And they get up to the top, and, you know, he questions her, and he's like, you're a thief. You're, like, a really good thief. And he offers her a cut of the money that he's going to make. But Parker tells him that she's like, no, we need to give this information to the Venezuelan people. Like, this is important. It's
gonna screw this is going
over.
To Professor Garcia. This is what yeah. you're going to do.
And he's like, no. He's like, I have people, like,
Depending on me.
And so then she's like, oh, okay, well, I get that. And she's like, hang on. Sophie tells Parker to, like, just tell him he can have the money. He'll get his money. Don't worry about it. So I love this scene. Tara distracts the drug cartel people by tangoing with Octavio Escobar. And to, like, make her boyfriend jealous, she says. And they tango while Sophie does, like, a kick switch with
a kick switcheroo with the suitcases. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because because they read the expressions and they figured out, like, the Texas tycoon has about 500,000, but the drug cartel folks have more. So they're doing a switcheroo.
And at this point, too, though, the Texas Texas oil guy has disappeared. He left. Like, they think he got scared off. So they're like, okay, well, we'll take this money, and then he can have that money, and we'll take the stuff. Jerry Ryan and Roberto Sanchez, like, studied a lot, like, practiced the tango a whole bunch. They would, like, stay after when they were rehearsing and, like, have more lessons and stuff. And it was actually, like, when they put a call out, was, like, this actor needs to know how to tango. And a lot of people will just put, like, oh, I know how to do this thing on their, you know, acting resume. And it doesn't usually, you don't usually actually need to know how to juggle, but he really did need to know how to tango. But yeah, they had a great tango. And then I love at the end, he was like, if you dance this dance with your boyfriend and he does not pay attention to you or something like that, you will know.
He is gay. I mean, not appropriate, not necessarily appropriate for 2020, but.
No, well, I mean, but you'll know he's not into you. Like. So where are we now? Yeah, and so Sophie, like, successfully switches out the
briefcases. Yeah.
And
by pretending to trip and fall over the waiter, I believe, and making a bit of a spectacle of herself.
Yeah, a little bit. No, she doesn't strip. She doesn't trip. She asked the waiter for a, like, an hors d'oeuvre, and the waiter trips a little bit.
Ah, right. Yeah.
And then she gets it. Yeah. So, yeah, Parker gets the money, the suitcase, and, like, gives it to Mattingly and gets the thumb drive. But then Tara sees, you know, tells Sophie that Escobar is leaving, and so they, like, trail him, and then they see him still meeting up with Mattingly in a room. But, like, why would they meet up if Mattingly already got rid of the item? So, like, something's up. And it turns out he has another thumb drive. And now he's selling this to Escobar as well. And his briefcase, Escobar's briefcase, is still filled with money. Which it shouldn't be, because it should be the hopes and dreams of the Venezuelan people.
So should be the tape recorder of the children singing in song.
Exactly.
Children's voices in song.
Yeah, so Parker realizes this guy is probably a better thief than he was letting on, which is pretty smart. And that Escobar has stolen the other bidder's money and that he's using that to pay for the drive, because she finds the Texas oil man in a walk-in freezer in the kitchen, because she's gone to, like, make good with Peggy. And so she's a little pissed. Then
just want to say that moment when they find out that, like, Mattingly screwed them, and then Parker has that look in her eye when she's like, he is mine.
Yes.
Like, that look in her eyes, and the way that Purposeful March was, like, that was, like, the exact same thing in the Maltese Falcon job, when over the earbuds, Hardison tells her that it was Tara who had set them up.
Yes,
and she does. And then, like, and she marches right up to Tara, chokes her, and then basically, like, tries to dangle her off the thing. And, like, it was that exact same look. Like, the dark Parker has come out,
and it's the exact same move. She, like, gets out of the elevator. He's there, and she grabs him by the neck and throws him up against a wall. In the same exact same way, and we're reminded. She hangs off buildings for a living. She is very strong. She has very strong fingers.
Yes. Yeah, and I think it goes back to the fundamentals. Like, even in the Nigerian job, Parker does not like being crossed.
No.
And you don't come between her and her money.
Yeah, even if it's, like, not money that she's...
On behalf of a client. Even if it's money on behalf of a client.
Exactly. Like, you know, for the time being, that is her money, and do not fucking touch it. But I love, like, she shows up, and he's like, oh, hey! And she's like, puts him in a, like, grabs his throat. And what are they gonna say?
And honestly, Sophie and Tara probably saved Craig's life at that moment.
Yes. Yes. And I wonder if Tara had like some flashbacks when she saw that.
The chokehold.
Yeah. And but they, you know, they show up just in time and they, the four of them talk over like what's going on. Because they also witness Escobar like immediately destroy the information, the thumb drive. He like drops it in a glass of champagne. And they're like, why would he do that? Like why would
should
he...
the cartel be using that information to their advantage? Right.
Yeah. And so then they realize he's not working for the cartel anymore. Now he's working for the government and they wanted him to get rid of it. And also that, you know, this isn't the only way he's going to get rid of the evidence. He's also got a bomb and he's going to blow up the building and the people in it.
Like Tara's spidey senses are going and she's like, okay, if they're working for the government, this is smelling like Odessa. And the Sophie's like, what happened in Odessa? There was a bomb in Odessa.
Yeah. And as somebody
and I think
Texas,
that was the moment they went to a commercial break. And that was like one yes. hell of a mini cliffhanger. It was really a bomb good. In Odessa.
There's some good like cuts to commercial cliffhangers. So I love like just having like a Texas point of view. I'm like, well, which Odessa do they because there's an Odessa in Texas. So there's like Midland Odessa, which is like a big oil area. But it's definitely not what Tara was thinking about. But it was the first thing that came to mind for me. I was like, oh, yeah, probably not Midland. Probably not West Texas. Like, probably not. So yeah, so, you know, they meet up with Parker, who's choking
Madly.
And they all kind of like brainstorm over the location where the bomb is probably located and how it was placed somewhere, and they realize that Peggy had that incompetence.
Even Mattingly was like, this is not kosher, this is not okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And he, yeah, so they realized that it was one of her employees who did it, because Sophie's like, oh yeah, like the first thing they teach you when you're a waiter is how to hold a tray properly. And we saw him earlier, like holding the cups by the top.
And they narrowed the suspect. I thought it was so interesting, the perspective that they narrowed the suspect. It would either have to be someone high enough with the clearance or somebody low enough, like nobody would pay attention to.
No one would pay any attention. Yeah. Okay.
So they're game planning at this point. Like we have to stop the bomb. We have to stop Escobar, and we have to save Professor Garcia, because the Venezuelan government is trying to, like, discredit him because he's, like, the voice for reform or something in Venezuela. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they, you know, first they've got to go get the bomb, though, so they, like, go down, and they're like, hey, Peggy, have you had any issues with your waitstaff? She's like, oh, you mean the worst waiter ever?
She Whoever. And Peggy just has her like badass moment, which I love.
Because the guy's immediately like, we need to get out of here. And she's like, no, I'm going to beat you up with this skillet, like this frying pan.
Look, Steve, she's had a hard day. She has some steam to blow off. Like, she has some aggression to get out.
And he came at her with a knife and she hits him and she's like, those are part of a set.
And she's like, why can't a nice girl who likes cats find him just find a nice guy?
No? Yeah, like a small business owner who loves cats find a nice guy. And I don't know, Peggy, but you deserve a nice guy.
Like, don't you relate to her on some level? Like, why just can't someone who can't get a woman who loves cats find a nice partner?
It's, yeah, it's the question, right? And then she's still
cheering for her while she was beating the guy up. I was like,
oh,
go,
yes.
Peggy.
Every time I'm like, yeah, Peggy, get him. like disaffected hipster waiter. And she's still beating him up when Mattingly and Parker get there. And he's like, oh my gosh, this poor man. And Parker's like, no. And Tara and Sophie go to the dining.
And Peggy like, and Parker's like, okay. That's enough, Peggy. Like, she had to walk.
So good. Sophie and Tara go to the ballroom and they like, they're like, okay, it's in one of the carts. Which cart is it going to be? There's a bunch of cards and they're like, oh, it's this one that somebody put right in front of the door to block it. And they go over and the bomb's going to like explode in like 2 minutes. So they're like, so they call Hardison, who is being chased through
some sort of lot
and is being chased by dogs. And he jumps up on a fence and answers the call and is like hanging off this fence. And the view you get is like the dog's perspective. In the commentary, I thought this was so funny. They were like, oh, this is shot using a prism and you like point the prism and then it like reflects. And I'm like, why didn't someone just like sit on the ground and like point the camera up? Like, why did you need to use a prism? I'm not in photography or, you know, filmmaking. And the camera people on Leverage are wonderful.
Far be it for us to prevent Mark Roskin like from playing with a nice shiny new toy.
It's true. I mean, and the, you know, the director of photography and the cinematographers on the show are really great. So, you know, do what you need to do. I don't know if it really needed to be that hard, but prisms are great. You can make rainbows with them. So I love them.
So Hardison was like, what? I'm a little busy right now. Do you have some other like gorgeous looking man you need to look up?
Yes. But then even though he's hanging off a fence with like, slab like dogs like barking and slobbering and like trying to get at him, he like tries to walk them through defusing this bomb where he's like, okay, you have to figure out which wire this is and which wire this is, and then you have to strip it, don't cut it, strip it,
and because you have they, to like, cut it in a certain order, we're all blow up and we all die.
Yeah, and they like look at each other and the next thing you see is the cart with the bomb being shoved out of a window.
Yes, and then Parker and Mattingly are playing cruise director.
Yes, I skipped that, and I'm so sorry because it is so good. Because she's like, what is
she's
her name?
Meg Dawson, Becky? But I forget what his name, fake name was. Phil something, yeah. I want to say?
He was like Chad. She gave him like the name. She's like, but I think she said I'm Mindy. Like she went up and like had a silly, no, Mindy was last week. But she's like, I'm Becky or something. And she's like, and this
Meg
is Chad.
Meg Dawson. I thought it was Meg Dawson.
Is it Meg?
Yeah.
So she just kept her juror number six name.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, everybody go outside. We're going to have fireworks and the Venezuelan color flags, the colors of the Venezuelan flag. And he's like, which are? And he like looks at the flags around the room. The bomb ends up being like the fireworks and everyone's like, ooh, ah. and then you see Tara and Sophie like sitting in the like drinking the Venezuelan liquor. So good. And they're like, that's you know, job well done.
I was like, that was the first thing we agreed on all night.
Yes, that's what they say. Mattingly and Parker are down on the ground floor with everybody or on the outside, and they give, that's when they give the money. Yes, there's also a deleted scene that I watched where they like dance together, which I was like, that's weird, because he like gives her both of the,
and then Mattingly has like a little fanboy moment because like,
oh yes, because earlier he was like, "What's your name?"
He reveals his name, and he's like, "The Parker," like "the" in the capital like letters. Yeah. And it's like, I never got to be up close and personal with Parker before, and she's kind of like, "Okay."
I know. He was like, "So you were in somewhere during Carnival," and she's like, "Yeah, I don't like parties. I don't like lots of people." Yeah, and then he does say the catchphrase, because she's, you know, like, he asks, you know, where have you been? Like, we thought you left the job or, like, left the business or died or something. And she's like, no, I'm still in the business. I just have a different work ethic now. And he's like, oh, so you're saying that, like, sometimes bad guys, and she's like, huh, uh-huh, you're going to get it? And he's like, don't have to be that bad.
I mean, we're talking about a guy who admits that, like, the people that we're counting on are his ex-wife and his bookie. So, like, not
who is
like,
also his barkeeper. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very true. So, you know, he's making baby steps. It's fine. You know, he says bye to her. And then we get the...
And I think they present info to Professor Garcia, and he's like, oh, the people of Venezuela, thank you. And now they're free to pursue their hopes and dreams. And Parker's like, yeah, cool. And then Madding's like, okay, dude, more power, you know?
Yeah, he's like, sure, fine. I guess so. Yeah, do that. And then back at the bar, Peggy forgives Alice over drinks. And we see that Sophie has both of the suitcases with the money. So I wonder where that money goes. And she's
assuming, they gave some of it to Peggy
That'd be nice. That'd be lovely.
I mean, to make up for what she went through that night.
She's like, Peggy, I'm buying you drinks forever. I'm going to buy you 18 new cats. but Peggy's just excited that she knows Alice's secret, and that's that she's a spy. And they're like, yes, I'm a spy. And that's
like, so Peggy's like, oh, okay, I get it. It was a mission thing. Like, you weren't trying, I get it. We're so totally friends. I still love you. It's all good.
Yeah. And I love it. She's like, even though I didn't meet anybody special, at least I got to stop a bombing. And I got to beat someone up with a frying pan.
That's something.
Yeah.
And then Parker and Sophie's like, yeah, you're doing great, sweetie.
It's a good way to look at it. And then she's like, okay, I got to go, but I'll see you at book club. And Parker's like, oh, yeah, the contortionist's daughter. Which was apparently a book title from an episode of King of Queens, which Chris Downey worked on. So in the commentary, John Rogers is like, so does that mean Leverage and King of Queens are in the same universe? And Chris Downey's like, maybe we could get Kevin to come on.
Lord. Well, maybe they can nail down Kevin James for the reboot.
Oh,
I mean, like, and Mark Shepard has to come back. Do you remember when the news came out? He was like all up in John and Dean's like DMs, like,
I'm here. I'm is still doing Supernatural. I'm sure. Yeah, he just needs to be. Yeah. This needs to happen. And
bringing him on. They can't do the reboot without him.
No, they cannot. There's no way. And I love so Peggy is like, yeah, I'll see you at book club. And Parker's like, the contortionist's daughter. And then she's like, I'm really liking it. And Peggy turns away and she's like, it's horrible. Like she's just mouthing to Sophie.
It sounds like some awful lithic thing, though. The contortionist's daughter.
Yeah, and Peggy's like, oh, Marge, you should come too. And Sophie's like, Marge? You get it. Parker's like, I panicked. I had to just give you the first name I thought of.
Marge. I'm sorry, I know. It was just, I was put on the spot. Marge was what came out.
Right, and then we find out what happened to Mattingly. He got in the cab behind them that Tara also got into, and they went back to his hotel room and they made love on the feathers from his pillow that was cut up earlier.
I think it was the commentary. And John Rogers was like, welcome to America, Will Travail. Welcome, son. You get to make out with Jerry Ryan.
Because it was the first scene that they shot. It was like the very first thing he did was get to make out with Jerry Ryan.
Not a bad day's work.
The American dream. Like, he did it. He made it.
Not a bad day's work.
Miracle. Amazing. Which I think, like, going back to the conversation with Tara and Sophie about, you know, being a grifter and no one knows your true, who you really are. Like, if you're with another thief, they know you're a thief. Like, there you get to be a little honest. So I'm like, oh, look, Tara got that at least. Which yeah. I like. And that is the Girls Night Out job. And in the next one, which oddly enough, our co-host will be Tara, not Tara Cole, Tara Kennedy, we'll be talking about the Boys Night Out job and find out all the extra little bits.
We're going to fill in the missing pieces and see what the boys have been up to.
Yeah, see things from their point of view. Oh, and we didn't mention that Escobar gets taken in by our new favorite cop, our new favorites. I forgot her name. She was just in the experiment job. Detective. Hang on. Detective Grayson. She's back.
And the Texan is pissed.
Yes. He has no name. She's, you took my money, Escobar.
He doesn't really even get a name. He's just the rich Texan.
He's just the rich Texan, which they were like pointing out is a very like Simpsons kind of thing. There's always like the rich Texan.
I mean, as a Texan, were you offended that he was not even like thought worthy enough to deem like given a name? Like there was no issue there.
No, he's a Texas oil man. Like you just say that and you're like, oh yeah, okay, I got it. You don't need to say anything else. He doesn't need a name. I know exactly who you're talking about. Exactly. Any last thoughts on this episode?
I think we covered everything we needed to cover. It was good to have Tara back.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it was really interesting to see her and Gina really play off each other.
Yeah.
I mean, even though they were squabbling on like you can tell there's actually a lot of respect for each other's talent. Like each other's abilities. Like you don't go at each other unless you deem that person is on your level and a worthy opponent.
Right.
You know? So
right.
I wish they could have gotten her back before the end of the series. So maybe they can get Jerry Ryan back too. Mm. Love to see Tara.
Yeah, I know she's on the new Picard show, the new Star Trek show. But maybe that would be awesome.
I mean, I would love to see Tagger and McSweeten come back and see how far they're probably directors at the FBI by now.
Let's keep delving into the reboot. So people you want to see come back, Tagger and McSweeten, Sterling, Tara.
Maggie, obviously.
Maggie, who I hope is remarried with a kid.
Hardison's Nana.
Oh, I would like to see her for the first time, yes.
Richard Chamberlain, Archie.
Yes. Is he still alive? Knock on wood.
Richard Chamberlain's still alive.
Okay, I don't know. I would love to see a lot of like the younger people that they like fostered in different episodes, like who they taught how to do things, like maybe the daughter from the episode we just had with the cross my heart job, or the young girl mechanic from
the car one. Will Wheaton is chaos.
Like, Will Wheaton is chaos. Yeah. There's a lot of crossovers I want. Are there any plots that you think are like ripped from the headlines? Could be. I've been watching a lot of like really shitty reality television lately, and I kind of think it'd be hilarious if one of them was on like a long con where they had to like infiltrate a reality show like The Circle or Love Island.
The Bachelor. Oh my god.
Maybe not Love Island. Oh my god. Hardison on The Bachelor.
Oh god.
But like kind of going off the documentary angle of like in the office job when they're trying to avoid the cameras, I think that would be really funny to do that.
I mean, I don't rip from the headlines thing. I don't know. I feel like everything that's like really topical would just, I don't know if any attempt to do a story on it would feel like inappropriate. You know what I mean? like taking away from the severity of the issues.
Yeah.
But that being said, like, I really want them to take down Martin Shkreli, Farmer Dubro.
Yes. Yes. See, that's something they could do. I do think some things need, like, an appropriate amount of time to have passed or to, like, I mean, I don't think that the Leverage team can take on systemic racism, right? Like, they have to, like, take out a single person who represents something or a single person who's done a lot of harm. But, like, you can't take out systemic racism because it is systemic, right? They, like, you can't take down the patriarchy. Like, with
they can
one
take
con.
Down the Pharma Bro, though. They can take down the Pharma Bro. Good. Totally. I would like them to take down the Westboro.
That would be fun. I think they could unseat a, you know, Supreme Court justice.
And a certain governor who was the Secretary of State in a certain southern state and who did not recuse himself, and there were shenanigans in the elections.
Mm-hmm.
And there were still shenanigans in the most recent election.
Yeah.
I mean,
they could expose some blackmail with certain Eastern European countries. But they don't need to do that because it's actually already been done and nothing happened. But,
but really, Pharma Bro, like, he just has this coming. He is like so freaking damn smug, y'all.
Okay, I like it. This is, you know, get in touch with us, Leverage. that idea is copyright Lisa Lynn, so if you want to use it, you got to pay her royalties. Or Lisa
I have an agent.
Credit.
I will give you my agent will talk to.
Exactly. She needs a producer credit at least.
And, you know, yeah. I would not mind hopping a plane down to NOLA and getting to check out the set for a day or two.
Yes, if you need me, that's only like a 6-hour drive from me. I could be there. I will be an extra in a background who has like powdered sugar from a beignet all over her shirt. I don't mind.
And with a muffaletta in your mouth.
What?
And a muffaletta in your mouth.
No, not a muffaletta. It'll just be beignets. I don't like olives, but. Yeah, I'll be eating some crawfish in the corner.
I'll just have a sip of hurricane in my to-go cup. It's fine. I can be an extra sipping my hurricane.
There you go. I love it. You won't have to worry about continuity with me. I'll just keep eating the beignets. It's fine.
I mean, is there someone else you would like to see? Any other particular storyline you'd like them to tackle?
I thought I had one. I really like my idea of the reality television show one. But I can't remember what my other one was. So maybe I'll talk about that next week if I think of it. And I know in a couple episodes we'll have Robin on, and she's really good at like coming up with fan fiction ideas of what she wants to see on Leverage. I'm serious. If anybody wants us to be on it, I'll be there.
I mean, I would also like to see them tackle like a certain Hollywood producer who was a predator,
yes,
and pretty much an open secret, you know, and maybe a certain news personality who had a secret button under his desk to lock people into his office.
Yes.
Who then had the nerve to write an op-ed saying maybe the Me Too movement has gone too far or something. And I think it may have been in reaction to something I don't remember, but I was like, the fact that he thinks he has any place to say anything in that discussion is just.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I know. Mm. But I think, like, but what would the scam be on the reality show, though? Like, are they, like, what are they, like, you know? Who's their victim in your reality show situation? Like, who are they trying to help and make whole?
I don't know. I've got to think on that. That's a good point. I just, like, the visual of it, I really liked. who would be hurt by a reality show? Like, I think a lot of people who are on reality shows afterward, like, I don't think the 15 minutes of fame, like, works out the way they think it's going to be. I just finished the first season of Love Island. Like, I watched it way too, like, I watched it in 1 week. It's like 30 something episodes, which is part of why I was so exhausted yesterday. But I was like looking up, like, where are they now? Cause it's been 5 years since that season. And like several of the women who were in the like final groups, like aren't on social media anymore. And so part of me is like, were they driven off because of trolls? So I think that could be something. I think internet trolls, like doxing, I think that would be a really, really good thing for them to tackle. Maybe not with the reality show, but I think, you know, people who regularly dox people, or might be a little too gritty, but like revenge porn.
Then that would have to be an episode where Hardison takes the lead.
Oh yeah.
Because that would be such, that is such a tech angle. So he would have to take point on that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think that would be a really important one to tackle.
This is true.
Ooh, like a Twitch stream. That's what it should be. It shouldn't be a reality show. It should be like a professional video gamer. And then it should be people trolling there in the comments and doxing and things that way. Yes. All right, oh. There you go. Do you have a high slate?
As a matter of fact, I do. Let me pull it up.
All right.
Do you have one? Do you want to go first?
I do. I have one. It's called Art World Wunderkind Arrested Months After Fleeing the U.S. So get ready for this man's name. His name is Inigo Philbrick.
Oh, Lord.
An elusive contemporary art dealer who disappeared in the fall after being accused of defrauding clients of more than $20 million. He was arrested on Thursday by U.S. law enforcement agents on the Pacific island of Vanuatu. So he's been transported to Guam, and he's going to be presented in federal court on June 15th. So that was yesterday, right? When we're recording this. So it says you can't sell more than 100% ownership in a single piece of art. Yeah. Which Philbrick allegedly did, among other scams. He's 33. He was accused of wire fraud and aggravated identity theft. So yeah, excellent. There's an article on some more stuff. With his gallery reporting a turnover of about $130 million in 2017, Mr. Philbrick opened a branch in Miami in 2018. He was a conspicuous bidder on big ticket works at marquee contemporary auctions, and he lived the highest of high lives, sporting a 5990 Patek Philippe Nautilus watch and regularly chartering private jets. By the late 2010s, demand for Mr. Philbrick's favorite artists had begun to cool, leaving the dealer with the challenge of satisfying profit-hungry clients in a falling market. The elaborate schemes Mr. Philbrick used to maintain his business and his lifestyle were revealed in several lawsuits in 2019. Mm-hmm. he was a little sketchy. So he like, boy. It's like he sold artworks multiple times so he could make triple the, you know, price, the profit on it multiple times. So yeah, it's pretty bad.
Oh, Lord.
Also, he looks like a dick. He looks like a jerk. And his name is
including that in? Are we including that part in, or are you cutting
the dick? He looks like a dick? Yeah.
You're keeping the dick?
Yeah. Why not? Keeping the dick. Keeping you saying that. Oh, Lord.
Yep, that could be bad, taking out of context.
I'm going to put that in the, like, the very end. That's the stinger. Just you saying, keeping the dick.
You do that to me all the time. It's not fair.
I mean, you just open the door. I have to walk through it. Where to go?
Okay.
All right, what is your high slate?
It's from a Reuters article, and it's called, the title is exclusive, FBI, Targets Johnson & Johnson, Siemens, GE, Philips, in Brazil graft case.
Mm.
So the FBI is investigating corporate giants Johnson & Johnson's GE and Philips for allegedly paying kickbacks as part of a scheme involving medical equipment sales in Brazil, according to two Brazilian investigators, according to their sources. That the prosecutor, Brazilian prosecutors suspect the company channeled illegal payoffs to government officials to secure a contract with public health programs across the south, across Brazil for the past 20 years, two decades. Brazilian authorities say more than 20 companies may have been part of this cartel that paid bribes and charged the government inflated prices for medical gear, such as magnetic resonance MRI machines and prosthetics.
That's messed up.
So according to this, the four companies that I mentioned have a combined market capitalization of nearly $600 billion, 600 with a B. So, apparently there are European companies who have engaged in this as well. So they're saying they can face fines and punishments under the U.S. Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, according to the FCPA. Since 1977, has made it illegal for American citizens, U.S. companies, and foreign companies whose securities are listed in the United States to pay foreign officials to win business. So, I read this article and thought it was appropriate for this episode because it involved like government corruption and oil, big companies, big pharma instead of big oil, but I'll send you the link.
Please do. That's awful. Like my guy, just screwed over people who are already rich. So maybe he's not the worst. but that's like screwing over a country, like a whole country of people. There are a lot of people in Brazil who are very poor.
And they are hard hit by the Rona right now because their president screwed up.
Yeah.
That
and we don't even know how hard they're being hit because he's not sharing the numbers data the right way anymore.
Oh. Yeah, but that's what got me, Steve. 600 billion with the B. 600 billion.
Just got like a 1,000-yard stare. Like, I cannot.
Like, can you, how do you even wrap your mind around a number like that?
You can't. You cannot. No, that's sickening. When did this article come out?
May 17th, 2019.
Because I was like, man, people are still out there doing this work in this pandemic. I mean, they're chasing this guy to Vanuatu, so. Amazing.
Yeah. This was a year ago. It's gross and it's bad and it's wrong.
I kind of vaguely remember something about Johnson & Johnson being in the news, but it could have been something else too. Okay, so Lisa, tell people where they can find you on the internet.
Well, for Resta One, though, because of the whole just waving your hand at everything in the world in general, I'm not on there as much as I used to be, but I will still be there. And,
Same.
I am going to lift the embargo, so if one feels compelled to send me Kath and Box's gifts, feel free to do so. I'm lifting the embargo at this time.
Good. I mean, we all need a little happiness in our lives. I showed you a cat in a box a minute ago, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Leo.
Yes, you did.
It's a thing. So you can find me on Twitter at LibrarianSti, and you won't see us again, but you'll hear us again in 2 weeks to talk about the boys' night out job with Tara.
And I will be back on the last damn job, the finale with Sally. Just like
the finale with Sally.
Aw,
it's an unfortunate rhyme, but still.
I know never to cross a Scorpio. Y'all are scary.
You but like, once we're on your side, once we're on your side, it's ride or die. It's ride or die.